Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. This week at MIT, digital innovators and inventors from around the world are taking part in the International Fab Lab Conference. Fab Labs provide widespread access to digital invention and production and have spread from inner-city Boston to rural India. Here's the idea. Let's say you want a new chair for your kitchen table. You could buy one at IKEA or Target or order it online through Amazon. That's the conventional route. But in the world of Fab Labs, you can build it yourself using computers, 3D printers, milling devices, laser cutters, and digital assemblers. Put simply, in a Fab Lab, you can turn data into things and things into data.
This is very, very precisely a third industrial revolution.
So this is Neil Gershenfeld, head of MIT's Center for Bits and Atoms. He's the inspiration behind Fab Labs, which he explains this way. After the Industrial Revolution, the first digital revolution brought us computing. The second one democratized communication. Gershenfeld says Fab Labs are sparking a third revolution, which will empower regular people everywhere to use data to build smart things.
So digital computing let anybody compute. And you understand the impact of widespread access to computing. This now democratizes fabrication, but it's going to be bigger than the previous two digital revolutions because it brings the programmability to the physical world.
We met Gershenfeld recently at the Center for Bits and Atoms, or CBA, at MIT. This is like the original Fab Lab, ground zero of the personal digital fabrication movement.
This started with a group of colleagues with an ambitious NSF proposal to say we wanted one of every machine to make anything of any size. And that's what we've come pretty close to doing.
So from one of any machine to make anything of any size.
So not all of them, but each process at each length scale. So we're now going to walk through nanoscale, microscale, mesoscale, macroscale, things to turn objects into data and to turn data back into objects.
Gershenfeld's tour will show us machines that can make very tiny things, the size of atoms, to machines that can build very big things, like airplanes. So our first stop is something called a focused ion beam writer. His students are using it to make computer and cell phone microchips.
Take the phone. The phone has integrated circuits in the display.
Right.
They're nanotechnology. They have these now nanoscale features. It's a $1 billion chip fab where you mass produce them. This lets you make things like that one at a time on demand.
On a personal computer sitting in a small lab.
Yep.
Anywhere
yep.
in the world yep. eventually. Gershenfeld takes us next to a machine that uses light to mill larger particles, which are about 1/100th the width of a human strand of hair.
That explosion is extremely energetic, far ultraviolet light, essentially exploding little microscale features.
The next machine produces bigger things. Graduate student Nadia Peek has built a tabletop briefcase kit that can serve as a 3D printer, milling device, and assembler. Her idea is to use this one machine to make any other building machine you might need, on the go and on the cheap. At least that's the idea.
There's a notion that, you know, digital fabrication lets you do everything, and we're at this new era of Star Trek replicators, and everybody is going to 3D print everything that they need ever. But really, that's kind of an aspirational term right now. 3D printing seems evocatively to indicate, like, anything you need, you're going to have it right now. But actually, we have a really long ways to go to make sure that anyone not only could make anything, literally anything, but anyone could also conceive of anything and think of how they... You know, how does a problem translate into a solution, and how do you build that? Like, those steps are non-trivial.
Neil Gershenfeld says we're probably 20 years away from making that Star Trek-type replicator, a machine that can make anything, anytime, anywhere. But walking through his lab and seeing what his students are working on makes the future feel a lot closer than that.
So this is Sam behind you.
Sam, nice to meet you. Anthony Brooks. Hi,
Anthony,
nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Bigger length scales, we're working very closely with the aerospace industry and NASA on how you make things like airplanes and spaceships. And today when you make a carbon fiber airplane, you need a tool the size of the airplane to make the airplane.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
But this machine is much smaller. Gershenfeld calls it a custom Ziploc extruder. It makes carbon fiber aircraft parts.
You'll see these are Ziploc extrusions that lets him design skins that snap together to make the surfaces of these parts.
I see. Make
completely snap together airplanes, for example.
Wow.
Homemade, computer milled, snap together airplanes. Wow, indeed. I found myself saying that a lot on this tour. As the production machines in Gershenfeld's lab get larger, the everyday uses become clearer.
So these are now larger machines. This is Tom.
Hey, Tom.
One of the things you can do with this is cut out furniture parts. So the sort of things you'd buy at IKEA, you can plot out the same kind of furniture parts. So one of the things we do is we make fiber composites. If you wanted to make like a car body, you'd mill this to make tooling, and then we lay up friendly materials, natural fiber and natural resin, to make composite parts.
Neil Gershenfeld argues that the work being done here at MIT and at fab labs around the world represents the dawn of a digital revolution in manufacturing. His big idea is that materials themselves contain information, almost like their own DNA, which can let us program machines to build machines that build stuff. And this is what's happening at a network of some 500 fab labs around the world, from Boston to Southern Africa to the Arctic Circle in Norway. Gershenfeld says fab labs promote a free flow of information, creativity, and the ability to build. And they're changing the way we think about design, production, and consumption.
If you think about the whole notion of work, you leave home for many people to do something you don't want to do, to making something designed by somebody you don't know to sell to somebody you'll never see, to get money to then go buy something that you want. But if you could just make what you want, it really shortcuts that whole loop. And what they're doing is what they call data in, data out, instead of products in, trash out. It's globally connected for knowledge, part of this global network. The bits come and go, but the atoms stay. And so the products you consume in the city, you produce in the city.
Which brings us back to that idea of building your own kitchen chair.
The big box store can maybe produce it incrementally cheaper. But if you're producing it for yourself, you become part of the cost structure rather than paying for the whole supply chain to ship it. And instead of taste being divined far away, you produce it on demand so the skills stay local. Furniture is an example that you can do today. Consumer electronics, you can produce custom on demand.
In a way, it's almost counterintuitive because we're using modern technology to get back to the time when we sort of make everything ourselves.
It's kind of a back to the future, but the crucial difference is it involves global connectivity. Look at what's happened to software development. It used to be Microsoft or IBM or big companies. Now we have a whole ecology of computing devices and of software development for them, and people making apps for one people, 10, 100, 1,000, a million. There's still the operating systems, but arguably those are the least interesting part of software right now. There still will be mass manufacturing, but that makes the least interesting stuff because everybody needs the same thing. Then what you get is all of these tiers of manufacturing that weren't viable before that involve expression and personalization.
And he says that opens the door to an almost unlimited sense of invention and innovation. Neil Gershenfeld runs the MIT Center for Bits and Atoms, and he's the founder of the International Network of Fab Labs. All this week and this weekend, he's hosting FabFest, a gathering of designers, innovators, and amateur builders from around the world. You can find a lot more information about all this at radioboston.org. And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.